Changing Playbooks, an actual play podcast about making and embracing the change in the stories we tell and the impact that has on us, the players. My name is Claire. I'll be facilitating the game today, and you can find me on YouTube and Twitch at Claire Skies Ahead, as well as on the show I co-host Salt Cravings. Our players today are Cam.
Hi, my name is Camellia Sinestris. You can call me Camellia or Cam if you like. You can find me at Twitch. I stream weekly at Camellia Sinestris. It's a bit of a mouthful to spell out. I'm sure it'll be written or linked somewhere. Mm-hmm. And also, I have a YouTube channel where I just put up VODs of my streams. There are no edited videos on there, but if you feel like checking it out, that's where you can find me.
I think they're pretty good. Rally.
Hey, I'm Rally Darling. I am around. I don't know. I had to be key-fobbed. Someone had to put an air tag on me because I have a tendency of getting into trouble and lost, but you can find me here and you can find me around. So yeah.
And Lou.
My name's Lou. I'm right here. Am I anywhere else? Who's to say?
Lou's to say.
I went from being the one who had the least to say and the least preparation to the most because I thought, you know what, we're actually starting, I should have something to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really were like on it, yeah.
I'm just dissociated.
Yeah, I'll figure, we probably won't do that every single time, but I imagine at the start of like seasons and when we, I guess, start the show proper because, I mean, we did the world creation, today we're going to do character creation and then we're going to start the narrative, but some people skip. So, mm-hmm. Rally, I think you were going to say something.
Oh, no, nothing of value ever.
That's not true.
That's patently false.
Jokes are also encouraged. So if people are familiar with our voices and pronouns, my name is Claire, I use she, her.
I'm Camellia, she, her.
I'm Rally, she, her.
I'm Lou, they, them.
And today we're going to be playing Girl by Moonlight by Andrew Gillis, a Forged in the Dark game about magical girls. We are going to start our game of the Kiloanum orbit. And the original premise was that there are two planets. They are in convergence and we are going to explore what that means. But we are sticking with one world for now, since we don't really have enough of a party to split a campaign and put one of you on one planet. Be very funny and boring. But we're going to be playing on the planet Sinaru, the planet of the speaking winds. And of course, there's like a whole lot of questions of like, what does this mean? What are we playing? Thankfully, Girl by Moonlight has a whole set of rules about setting up and deciding what is true in our world. We're going to be selecting a play set and then answering some questions. And among those questions, we're going to make characters. By we, I mean, y'all are going to make characters. I don't get a character. I mean, I get all of the characters, but I don't get your characters. But your characters are the interesting ones. So I'm very excited to meet them. To start off, I did send y'all a custom play set, which would be good to open at this point, as well as having the rule book open on page 151 and just sort of like skimming at the Brink of the Abyss playset and just like take a couple minutes and like see if you would prefer to go with one or the other.
To me, I thought Brink of the Abyss seemed interesting.
It seems like they're both very customizable as I skim over it. Oh, series abilities. Okay, I never got this far.
Yeah, this is why going through them, they all have very like different tones. One of the play sets, Beneath a Rotting Sky, is like, this series will end really depressingly. how do you try to escape your fate? And it's like, that's a different tone.
And so for your play set, did you borrow these series abilities from other series or make them up yourself?
So I made all the abilities myself. They're based on the abilities in other playbooks. There's some that are entirely custom, such as Curse of the Storm is one that I have not play tested at all. But I was like, this seems like chaotic. I will say so. At the Brink of the Abyss is very much focused on like, I mean, it is the classic magical girl. If you've watched Sailor Moon, if you've watched Steven Universe, these are the touchstones. There's some sort of magical, otherworldly element that has like caused the transcendence of our characters. And there's some darkness out there that is brewing and we're going to go face it. I would say a lot of its moves are more like, I mean, they're very similar in theme, which is why I based my playset on this, where it's like villains aren't just villains with no reason. They'll be like sympathetic in certain ways where like they have real reason as to like why they're doing things. There's like people are redeemable. It's a story of optimism and whatnot. Again, why I thought this was probably closer aligned to what we were looking for. Mine, I sort of leaned into that and went even harder. A big thing about Forged in the Dark games is that you're going to be spending resources in order to basically not face the consequences that you hurdle yourself towards. And this game does a good job compared to some others I've played and ran, where this one really encourages you to spend your resources and really go hard. And I sort of doubled down on that in my playset, where I'm just like, what if I gave you like essentially unlimited resources? And if you go really, really hard, it'll be great. Unless, you know, things go bad and it goes bad.
I am so ready to give 100%.
Yeah, I'm reading Curse of the Storm and it's full chaos.
It's full chaos. Uh-huh.
Full chaos. Yeah, I'm liking, I guess the storm is like, you know, it's a big thing in this world, which we created.
I think
in this world.
Yeah, yeah. In this world, we made in this world, this world. I think the biggest thing, I guess, is how do we feel about the storm being a source of antagonism?
See, that's,
because that is what my playset, I guess, focuses on. Not necessarily saying the storm is sentient, but that it is a source of antagonism of some sort. And we'll be answering questions as to what that means. Mm-hmm. If people are like, well, no, I would like either the storm to be background flavor only, or even like a source of positivity, I feel like my playset might come into conflict with that.
I'm all right with the storm being a source of antagonism. I do, like, this is tangential or even largely unrelated. I do want to find enough ways in the setting to flesh out things outside of the storm, lest it become what I've heard referred to as the Pokemon problem. Where in the world of Pokemon, everything always is Pokemon. And that is the only culturally significant entity. And I don't think we're going to do that, but I think it's a thing to be mindful of when coming up with a cool setting with a cool concept in it, to not let that concept become over-dominant.
Mm-hmm. Cam, thank you so much for bringing that up, because that's exactly what I was thinking about. I was like, you know, this was the one thing we talked about too, as an avenue into this world, the thing about long distance communication, but it can't be like the monolithic, you know, thing that this whole society or world circulates around. So I hope Claire created everything else in the world that we can focus on. We did that,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
you figured everything out? The economics?
Yeah, I wrote everything down. It's all there.
Thank you. Good.
I mean, thankfully, we do have this sort of aspect of the setting. We were told up front, there has been a global power that has fallen, and that can have little to nothing to do with the storms. And that provides a ton of additional. I mean, it doesn't have to have absolutely nothing to do with storms. Obviously, it'll have interfaced with them, but that provides a ton of context and background for the setting that is not dependent upon the storm. which I really like and I think is really good to have like a societal setting that does not necessarily rely upon the premise of the setting that we talked about extensively. My so I think we're set up for success with that.
Absolutely. I think my concept of the storm, or at least any type of weather pattern, is it has no valence emotionally towards the, you know, the people it is giving the storm to. Like, in the same way that nature is not evil or good, it just is nature. It's, you know, terrible things happen, but it's just like what it is. What's the word? Like when you
apathetic?
Don't care if something is there or not. Yeah, not quite apathetic. It's like disregarding. Or,
apathetic, I think, implies sentience.
Indifferent?
Though.
Indifferent. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's just indifferent. It's like, if you're here or not, it doesn't matter. I'm still going to exist as the storm. I was there before you. I'm going to be there after you, perhaps. Yeah.
Yes. I think that's like a key difference is like, as I wrote within the Convergent Storm, I think the key difference from At the Brink of the Abyss is the abyss in The Brink of the Abyss is very much like a sentient power. It's like the darkness follows your friend and whatnot, and it like takes them over like that sort of thing, right? It corrupts them. I could think of like Utena as more of a depressing version, where it's like you're fighting your friend and they're getting not infected but touched by like the evil of the world to like whatever magical degree that is. Versus the storm, I wrote in a way where it's like, yeah, it could be a weird fucked up thing that stuff is coming out of and it's sentient, or it could be literally climate change.
Well, also it could be like the antagonism from the storm could stem from people interpreting and interfacing with it as well.
Absolutely. Right.
Like, my read on the storm, like these remarkable storms that do things to communication, not all storms, but these specific like capital S storms. My read has been that they'd be essentially that maybe the source of what we would consider supernatural elements.
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of the foundation of those things that are not consistent with our understanding of physics, etc. That's how I've seen it. I don't know if that works for other people, but
I like that. Yeah.
Because it's doing something weird with transmissions. It makes sense to me to play that out into, okay, it is the source of the things that us and, you know, listeners would not expect from the world, as it were.
Yes.
Riley, yeah. I haven't heard from you in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like hope is probably what's driving me most at the moment. So, yeah. If that...
Cool.
Yeah, that's the most succinct way of putting the nebulous thoughts that are scrambling around.
I did make sure that we're not doing a hopeless campaign, because I do feel similarly. I think some hope would be nice.
I'm pro-hope.
Probe.
If you will.
At pro-hope, we believe in hope. Okay, does anyone have a strong preference between one or the other?
No, yeah, no preference.
Like, I don't have a strong preference. I think from what you've said, I have not gone extensively over either of these. And my immediate reaction is you've put something together kind of specifically for our setting, like not exclusively, but you looked at what we built and went, okay, I can make a system for that. My inclination to say, okay, let's do that. You know, if you've done this thing tailored specifically to our setting, we'll probably have to do the least work making it work for us.
Word.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely wanted to offer something. At the same time, I don't want to feel like I'm quartering y'all into like what the story can or should be.
And I don't for a second feel like you're doing that. I feel
nice
like
try.
I feel like on the balance of offering too much choice or not enough choice, you will always err on too much choice.
You're probably right.
As a result, I do not feel remotely penned in. You could have decreed we're doing this one, and I'd go, cool, that's fine. Yeah. You know what we want. You've been very clear about asking what we want, and I have absolute faith you're going to respect the things we want. So, you know, I'm content to let you cook to an extent.
That means a lot. I've just decided in a new decree we're doing everything Cam doesn't want. Just kidding.
That'll be hard.
Because Cam wants everything.
I'm pretty flexible on this stuff, you know?
Okay, then yeah, let's go within the Convergent Storm, the place that I made. I'll read the overview to get us started. So within the Convergent Storm is about discovering secrets with wide-ranging effects. It brings danger from the unnatural as much as the natural and lets players make large-scale impact on the world. It prioritizes an optimistic outlook and a lighthearted story. Even though there is much danger in the world, problems should feel easier when people come together. The way this works is we're going to be answering questions, and normally in playbooks, you're just given like a set of answers, and for the most part, it is like just pick those answers. For us, because I wrote everything, feel free to just pick one of my answers. But also, I do encourage you to be like, well, if there's something like this thing or something else that you want to add to the list, please do feel free. So, okay, we're going to answer some questions. If you haven't listened to the world building game, that'll probably answer a lot of questions as well. But we are going to be basing it off of Sanaru, a world that we know there are strange storms where encrypted messages, I don't know if they're encrypted. Strange messages in a weird unknown language are coming out of. That's kind of going to answer some of these questions, but that doesn't mean we can't add to them. But I'm going to start by asking, what is believed to cause the storm? The answers I wrote down are air pressure in the atmosphere, a disturbance in the space-time continuum, powerful and ancient arcane, colonial resource extraction, otherworldly creatures of terror, or no one knows the truth.
I'm on that one. I'm on team no one knows the truth.
And how about Rally and Lou?
I think I like no one knows the truth, but secretly I know the truth, and it has something to do with the space-time continuum. I just want some kind of time travel to be involved. That makes things really difficult, so it doesn't have to do that.
I mean, one of the entire playbooks in this game is a time traveler. Time travel is, I think, explicitly on the table. But in terms of what is believed to cause the storm, I really like no one knows the truth, because it allows, essentially, we can create as many groups with as many beliefs as we want or need.
Agreed.
I like
Rally. Sets us up for conflict. Oh, go Rally, please.
Yeah, space-time continuum, powerful and ancient arcana. Because my brain immediately goes like, okay, well, that's like technology versus pseudo-technology, and no one knows the truth is a good way of having things be those three.
We haven't really talked about magic much, have we? Nope. No,
we have not.
They're supposed to be magical girls, I've heard, in this.
Well, we can flavor it in a few different ways. The book explicitly talks about recontextualizing them as mechas, which Claire had talked about potentially doing. Mm-hmm. But that's, I think, explicitly up in the air. The main thing is it can be as magical or non-magical as we want it to be.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
There is a whole section of like, why magical girls? I won't read the whole thing, but just, I guess, for anyone who hasn't read that section, whether it's the three of you or anyone listening, magical girls are about bodies and transformation and change, and it is explicitly trans and queer, and that is all of the things that I, you know, want in my story, where it's like, ah, yes, we have a true self that we embrace and that the world like looks at with either fear or disgust. And, you know, this could be as much as I turn into Sailor Jupiter as it is I get in a giant machine of death for the sake of other people.
I have no connection to that whatsoever. Nope, that's totally foreign to me.
And that's why I picked it. So, yeah, I'm good to just sort of. So the book does encourage to keep discussion as to like the why we're picking these, like to delve into them like as little as possible and sort of like flesh them out as we play the campaign, because we're going to be leaving a lot of big gaps because there is a mechanic in this game called flashbacks, which the more we leave vague, the more like room there is actually for y'all to have autonomy over filling the world in a weird way. So like the more we're vague, the more control we have actually. But if anyone wants to go more into what is believed to cause a storm.
I think for what is believed to cause a storm, I like the notion that there are many competing hypotheses as to what causes the storm, ranging from, you know, rigorous scientific investigation to, you know, pure religious faith to rampant speculation and absolutely everything in between, depending on, you know, the people believing and their motivations, their ideologies, etc. And what the actual truth is, we can collectively figure out, or Claire can unilaterally decide. And I'm actually fine with either of those, because I, as a player, like mysteries. I like times when I am in alignment with my character in terms of the lack of information I have.
Mm. Well, we can answer who sides with the storm. Maybe this will give us a little bit more context. So who sides with the storm? A religious group, a doomsday cult, a city or town, the elite and ruling class, a group of bored gods, or the creatures of nature.
I like cults.
Cults, religious groups.
I like
that.
That said, we talked about itself scientists, also, right?
Yeah.
We did, but are scientists siding with the storm, or are they seeking to understand it, which is sort of siding neutral?
I kind of love the idea of a city or town, because, like, what if it's a nomadic town, and it follows the storms? And maybe that's a town of scientists, or maybe it's people that, like, because of the physical impacts of the storm, are gaining some value from it? Who knows? But
what I'm hearing is the first three.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But like, that's also compatible, right? Like, you could have a significant religious group with a doomsday cult offshoot that's super dedicated, and there is a whole town or city that is made up of people who are not quite doomsday cult level, but are more devout members of this group that do have this kind of commitment to the storm, and possibly even like the entire city or town is nomadic and like chases storms.
Mm-hmm. And I also,
from a religious standpoint, which is not incompatible with a scientific standpoint, and so there are probably scientists in that town, some of whom may hold religious ideology around the storm and some of whom may not.
Mm-hmm. I also really like the idea of there being like creatures of nature that are like adapted to the storm or are present in it, because I don't think it would just be, I don't know, I kind of like the idea of you only see a certain animal when it's close to when a storm's coming or something along those lines. Not just the reaction of like animals before a tornado, but like things that actually enjoy it. And maybe they're not terrifying, maybe they're mundane, but
the storm equivalent of thermophilic bacteria.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. They just like pop out of the ground when it's storming. They're like, let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, the storm could be a part of some animals like reproduction, like cicadas that live underground for like years and years and years until this storm comes by and they pop up and populate the storm.
Mm-hmm. Or like,
I love that.
How flowers, crunchy. Some flowers turn to follow the sun. Like maybe they rotate to point towards or away, but just aspects of nature that are built into.
Yeah. Well, I suppose here's one thing we should probably determine. Like the storm is as I understand it, it is a term given to a subclass of storms that just pop up, not necessarily at random, but like there is no inherent schedule. It's not predicted or predictable. It is just some storms are like this kind of storm. And so it's not perpetual. It's not like there's one storm always raging, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
In
I
my
gave
mind,
it the name The Storm because the playset, I made it to be slightly flexible. So like it applies to our setting, but you know, if someone else used it or I use it again in the future for whatever reason, it doesn't have to be a literal storm. So yeah, when you're thinking of the storm, just think of like the source of antagonism. And in our world, I'm thinking our literal storms, our little brand of weird, freaky little storms that we've made up together are a source of antagonism.
I'm kind of conceptualizing it as like, kind of in the way we can't really predict when the aurora happens, only we know like a little bit before because there's a solar storm or something, that similarly, it's like...
Yeah, there may be warning signs.
Yeah, might be warning signs. The animals might act a little different, but in general...
I do need us to go not too deep into these questions. Like these should be like 1 minute answers tops collectively.
Good luck.
I know. But what I'm saying is I think we have it if we're good to move on, unless like I'm going to write a specific creature because we did talk about that.
Yeah. And I think they would add a lot of color.
I'll highlight four. for this next one, I need us to pick one, maybe two, and we can add to it again if we want, but one or two. What comes from the storm? Strange voices. I think in our setting, we already established strange voices come from the storm.
Correct.
Stone-melting flames, relics of the past and future, the children of the storm, or harbingers of ill fortune. What, you think stone-melting flames from a storm is funny, Lou?
A little bit. I just, yeah.
Tell it to the people who lost their houses to the storm.
I know. That just feels really extreme to me, but that's okay.
I don't think it's what we want here, but I like it's there. I mean, again, like as Claire said, this is intended to be not exclusively for our use in this setting. And so I think it's a good option to have for people who want a more violent storm.
Yeah, maybe the storm's a dragon, secretly.
Honestly, it could all work.
I mean, in another setting, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, right? The storm could be a dragon in a different setting. It's like, who sides with the storm, you know?
Leading, I like relics. Class, relics of the past and future. If I had to pick one, that would be the one I picked.
I don't know what Children of the Storm means, but I like it.
Intentionally vague.
Yeah. It's neat. And like, we did sort of establish there have been maybe half a dozen cases of people getting so profoundly altered by the storm, which is neat.
That's true.
Those feel like plausibly the children of the storm.
Really, it sounded like you were siding with relics of the past and future.
And children of the storm, if it's abstracted to not be like just necessarily people. But how we talked about like animals or whatever, like impact of nature. So those two stand out to me. But relics, yes. Relics very much.
Cam, unless you have a huge pushback, I think I'm going to go with relics of the past and future as majority.
I have no pushback whatsoever. Let's go.
Cool. All right. So what is the mundane world? This is sort of the world in which we're going to operate during the chill times. This is like, where are we? And by we, I mean your characters. And your characters, like friends, companions, families, etc. Where are they operating when they're not in a mission? And so what I've written down, and you can choose one or two: a living city, collapsing government, connected underground tunnels, a countryside community, a metropolis in the sky, nomadic camaraderie.
When you refer to the collapsing government, or sorry, the in the larger summary of our campaign, the authority that is losing power, is that on our planet specifically?
I hadn't decided, like, it can be. I didn't want to say one way or the other whether it was, but I, like, the other place that I almost made was to have it centered as the threat. So like, and also as Cam said, like, it can be a source of antagonism in this world just as much as the storm. Like, the storm isn't the only place that enemies will pop up from. It's just something that is like
locus.
I guess heightening the dangers. Sorry, Riley, what?
Oh, I just said locus, like L-O-C-U-S, like where...
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for answering that. Just when I see collapsing government, I don't know if it would overcomplicate things to select that or if it's synergistic with your vision, so to speak.
Choose anything. My vision is what we put down here.
Oh, yeah. Collapsing government and nomadic camaraderie are my thoughts. Or just a lack of government if it's such a spread out kind of population.
I like countryside community and nomadic camaraderie, but I feel like those are compatible with collapsing government or living city, right? Like, basically, I like the idea of, like, you know your neighbors, and, yeah, nature has a active character in the setting and not just a, like, place where things happen.
Yeah, I have no strong commitments on this one.
Okay, well, it sounded like nomadic camaraderie was there for both Lou and Rally. If we had to pick one other, what would it be?
It sounds like countryside community maybe is getting play, and I also kind of like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I will say, I know Lou, you said collapsing government. You also did say no government, which maybe countryside community. Because as we know, there's no government in the countryside. This is a true thing. Mm-hmm. Don't look into it.
Yep. Easy. Like I like that. I'm happy with that.
Sounds good. So now we're going to pick what is held to be sacred. Now, when I was first reading this, I was like, oh, these are good things. Like these are supposed to be good things, right? Sacred. Think of this as like, this is what, when we say sacred in this game, we're talking about things that are like the norm that aren't necessarily helpful for everybody. Mm-hmm. So this is why, and we'll see in the next question, the profane is actually what our characters are going to embody. The sacred is what our characters sort of reject. You know, if you're making magical girls, like what is the normalcy that they reject, right? It's like the idea of a stagnant gender or a male-dominated world, right? Like Steven Universe, for example, is like, oh yeah, like hierarchy, right? Like there's lots of themes of like hierarchical authoritarianism in Steven Universe as like what is sacred in the world of the gems, I guess. So yeah, that with that said, the choose one or two, what is held to be sacred? Power, tradition, ego, bravado, independence, capital, intelligence, achievement, and logic.
Something I'm stewing on is which we were talking about before, like for people that go into the storm, like what is their reasoning and what does it mean to go there? It makes me think of like the concept of conquest and like being able to conquer something as versus like understanding it or being in harmony with it. In a world where there is so much wilderness that is difficult to contend with, it could be sacred to challenge it or overcome it or expand or defeat things or conquer.
Yeah, like a specific subset of power that is essentially like the exercise of power in conquest.
Is that achievement or bravado? Because I feel like those hit on sort of what the end goal is.
Yeah, when I saw bravado, that's what I thought about. I was just having trouble like understanding what bravado could also mean. And I'd love to hear people's thoughts on that.
I think what you spoke to is like renown, right? Reputation or like your general standing because you're one of these brave people or because you're the one who like making a name for yourself, right? Bravado is sort of tied into that.
Thank you. Yes. Okay.
And that can also just be like, oh, because you're willing to do what other people are too cowardly to do. Like you are able to present yourself with bravado. And that's where my mind went with it in terms of it being related to power.
Well, also in the context of a global power that has recently collapsed, for there to be a global power, there would presumably be some reverence for, like, within a society that until recently had that, there would be at least some relationship with the valuing of control and conquest. If there is going to be such a grand power, and if there are now people trying to fill the power vacuum, there would be a lot of people who presumably still value that sense of control and authority.
So which one or two?
I think bravado for sure. I am open.
Bravado and power maybe jointly form this kind of notion. Because bravado without power would probably not be revered. Like if someone just is all bluster but they can't back it up, that probably wouldn't get you very far. That's my thinking. See, in this society.
But the framing of them as sacred is where I'm like, power is not like it. Power is collapsed, right? Power has been shown to not be this indomitable thing.
Well, but that doesn't necessarily mean it is suddenly given up as what is sacred. If it is collapsed and people still value it, they will try and prop it back up. And if you have people trying to fill power vacuums and seizing power, then there is clearly still a valuing of that power and authority.
Hmm.
If everyone suddenly was disillusioned with the value of power, you wouldn't have people scrabbling for scraps.
Yeah, I suppose it's a question whether or not it's a cultural value or if it's an individual value. So, in that way, I suppose.
I like the interplay of power and bravado. Like, it's the possession of power and also the exercise of it and the performance of power is revered, regarded well. Because it's not merely enough to have power. One ought to throw it around.
If I'm getting at what you're thinking, maybe Rally, is it that like with this idea of if there's like an overthrown government or group of body, like why would power it would be the recognition of authority and power as negative things. Is this what you're sort of like contending with as I'm hearing this?
Yeah, I mean, in my thought, it's the ones who, like the communities that survive are the ones that were not hyper-reliant on that power. And so,
right,
like,
offer like maybe a framing?
Yeah, go ahead.
So maybe it's power is seen as like, well, we used the power of us. It's not that power was bad, it's authoritarianism. And, you know, as long as we're strong in the face of authority, right? Authority is like the bad thing. But, you know, we got to be strong to make sure that no one bad gets into power, right? So we're gonna make sure the good people get the power, which is maybe a little bit more neoliberal than we want to go.
Yeah,
but that's
where I'm like,
that's one way of framing it. Sure. if it helps. But also please do share what you were.
I mean, I'm just looking for ways to make the sacred kind of toxic like actively.
Yeah.
And I feel like reverence of the, and I do think that a collapse of power and a reverence for that power is absolutely compatible.
Sure.
If you don't agree, I can either stop pushing for this, or I can try and explain further.
No, I think,
yeah, I just want to hear what Rally has to say.
Yeah.
I think of it through like the lens of the like leadership that is catering to the community. I know people use like servant leader, right, as the framing for it. But what I see as being most valuable is power that comes from, rather than being wielded, it's being given. And it's less about like the power itself and more about the trust. And in the context of a collapse, or in the context of small communities, right? Like, yes, their power, if we frame power as not just being like authority, sure, that works. And power can be there, right? Like power of community, power of bringing people together. I just
struggle with the thought of that being necessarily the biggest thing that a culture would value if that has led to collapse, right? Like, my thoughts immediately go to post-capitalism, like, or to the idea of, like, collectivism. And maybe that's where my brain is at when it comes to power. It's like, okay, if we're talking about power as, like, uniting and having a representative that is catering to us rather than, like, a structure that is building itself, sure. But if it's just about revering, like kings or like governance or whatever over people, I don't know if I would necessarily believe that to be something entirely widespread in a world where that has fallen apart.
So it sounds like the two distinctions are, like, one is this trust, right? Trust, camaraderie.
Yes.
And one is, like, strength.
Yep.
Will. These words, rather, maybe, like, not using the word power. Is there, like, strength or will or another word that more aligns with?
I mean, power works. It's just whether or not we acknowledge the nuance behind what people consider to be power.
I think so, yeah. It's just, like, what are the people en masse going to be like, this is really what matters. Why are you not with this? Like, why are you not this?
Mm-hmm. And there will always be people who don't agree with what is sacred. And there will always be a substantial number of people who don't agree with what is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about when power vacuums open up traditionally, there's often a lot of people who just want the chaos to stop and things to get back to the calm that they imagine was.
Sure. Yeah, I'm fine with keeping it for that reason, right? I just wanted to make, like, the nuance of defining how people value it and what they define as it is something that we keep in mind too. Because I think it has meaningful implications towards, like, senses of community, which helps with, like, an initial locus, especially in, like, the character design stage.
Yeah. I think in combination with bravado, I think it gets us there.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to what is considered profane. Love, emotion, gender, community, friendship, intimacy, curiosity, sincerity, generosity, honesty, and trust. So this is something that our characters will embody. This is, like, you know, what is considered profane? I, like, gender is something we all have experience with, where it's like, to us, this is like an extremely, this is our sacred, right? But this is what we're talking about when we say what is considered profane in this context.
What bad thing is actually good that we all love?
Basically. What do we embody?
And what gets us judged?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think trust. But I'm also a sucker for sincerity and honesty as being, like, valued as profane.
If you had to pick one of the three?
I think sincerity, then, would be the one that stands out to me.
And then Cam or Lou?
I'm feeling drawn to curiosity because I feel like it would encourage, I don't know, narrative in the future, but also anything.
Make all the scientists that I came up with profane. Yeah.
Right? I'm wondering, though, if, like, the above sacred things, to me, I'm almost envisioning, like the most sacred figure, like a trailblazing kind of conquering person. Is curiosity inherent to being able to go out there and take or claim things, or is curiosity a different aspect of that can be explored and challenged? Like,
I see what you're getting at. I think to an extent going out and, like, conquering has an element of exploring which feels hard to make incompatible with curiosity.
Mm-hmm. I guess my argument then is like curiosity leaning into, is empathy on this list? No, but like emotion, I guess, like
we can add
curiosity and like trying to understand rather than change to your desires, perhaps.
Yeah, like curiosity of exploration and discovery instead of expansion and conquest.
To like meet something as it is, What was that, really?
Oh, I was agreeing, yes. I think that's a good one.
It sounds like empathy, what you listed.
Yeah, I think that was the root. Like, I saw curiosity and then it brought me to empathy. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and I think your framing of, like, who is the most sacred person, like, if you're imagining, like, the ideal person in the society.
Like a propaganda poster of, like, some, like...
Exactly. Right,
mostly person in an adventuring pack with a flag, of course, that they plant.
Doesn't take
ground.
Anything seriously, you know. We'll just like laugh it off. Doesn't really take like there's nothing sincere about this person. Doesn't really like, you know, it's about making it through, and you gotta rely on yourself.
And it's also about like enacting and enforcing one's own will on the world, not interfacing with it as it is and meeting somewhere in between.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
I'm sold on that. The ideal person is an Age of Sail explorer from the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if we want to bring it back to like, how do we get here from a collective overthrow, right? I imagine it's like been at least a half decade since this change. And so, of course, like ideas of, you know, like strength and sincerity can get twisted in a way where it's like, oh, well, you should actually be strong. And it matters that you're strong, not the collective is strong. But there are still people who absolutely like, you know, the collective is what brings us our strength. And this is like where we're going to see our characters.
Mm, okay, great. Shall we move on to origin?
Couple more questions. What is our origin? Travelers who stuck together, co-workers, childhood friends, remnants of a broken polycule, were once a single person, emerged from the storm, shared a fixation.
If I had any doubts that you had made this, they have been... upon the rock.
Childhood friends, right? That's why you said
childhood friends, yeah, of course. Yeah.
I actually kind of do like childhood friends, though.
Me too.
It allows us to have a connection that explains why we are together, that nonetheless allows for us to have gone off and become wildly different people who might not have a ton in common now.
Yeah, love it.
And not to name drop a Worlds Beyond Number, but like they did it and it's working great. I'm eating it up, and we don't
need
to have that same dynamic.
I didn't even
think
about that, but you're so right.
Listen,
and you should say it.
All I ever do is just steal little ideas, but just one little one.
Is that not what creativity is?
I know, it's great. You just take a little bit of everything, make it yours.
Let me tell you about this thing called AI. Just kidding.
cursed.
No, it's great.
Yeah. So moving on. So now we're going to get into our own things. We're almost at playbooks and we're not going to select playbooks yet. But first, I'd like each of you to select one or two roles from this list that you think, you know, you'd like to embody. And of course, like, feel free to add to the list again if none of these really vibe with you. But just to read the list, there's meteorologist, ambitious student, experienced adventurer, storied elder, attentive caretaker, obsessive fan, ex-prophet, jealous rival, novice weather arcanist, shy strategist, hopeful romantic, professional assassin, or undercover journalist. Mm-hmm. These are just for you, so take a moment. Talk it through if you want to talk it through.
I think I already have grabbed two, so that's good. I am inclined to combine two into one and then also grab another one if that's all right.
You know what? Go for it.
Because novice meteorologist and hopeful romantic just jumps out at me.
That's great.
Someone who is studying these things but is new at it and is full of hope and ideals and, like, capital R romantic as well. Like, has all sorts of hopes and aspirations and dreams.
Yeah, I feel like
that's for me. And rally. Yeah,
I feel like for me, like, it would really depend on which playbook I chose, but generally I was gravitating towards experienced adventurer / shy strategist. I feel like those are going together for one playbook I'm thinking of. That's it for me right now.
Rally?
Hopeful romantic and experienced adventurer. I think attentive caretaker oh, yeah. could be a part of that. I think maybe knowing me, I'm not going to be able to keep track of stuff super well. So
group mom,
attentive
group
is not going to work for me. But I do love like the aspect of passionately caring about your friends. But I think that fits into like hopeful romantic and experienced adventurer, like that curiosity, that ambition, that joie de vivre. Yeah. I think if it wasn't attentive, yes, I would be attentive caretaker.
Oh, I mean, you can be inattentive caretaker.
Yeah. I know which playbook I was drawn to immediately.
Yeah, me too.
And it is not the one that I played last time.
Mm-hmm. Once I pick a playbook, I think if possible, I'd like to kind of return back to this list. But it's just
the
way
the point
I'm
is to like
it, but...
mostly just help you choose a
oh,
playbook.
Thank you.
But
okay.
Yeah.
You get to pull
yeah,
trigger
that's
now.
What it is. Just so like you're not like, I don't know who I am and I have no idea what role I even want to be.
I think I'm just the type of person where I like mechanics informing my role play, but you know.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm. I read
that
this
sounds good.
Sorry, I was just gonna say I read this like when I was first given the rule book and immediately went, I want that one, and everything has just stemmed from that, so
perfect.
I'm not obliged to play it if someone else really really wants it. I do have a couple backup options, but I have been beelining for one since day one.
Yeah, I'm glad when people are excited, so I want to help encourage that.
Well, we picked roles, and now this is the part where I get to not sit back because I still have to, you know, help y'all with the game, but this is where I get to meet your characters. This is the time where you are going to make playbooks. The first thing is make sure that any information that came up as we were, you know, talking that you feel is like relevant to your character, just make a note of that in your sheet. Yeah, so just to read from the book. Record and review series information. While answering questions from the series playbook, you have already made some decisions as a group that affect your characters. You know something about what kind of world they live in and what kind of adversity they will face. Make sure this information has been captured on the protagonist sheet of the series playbook for easy reference.
Gosh. These are all so cool.
They sure are.
All right. None of you overlapped, so you all get your first pick. Do each of you just want to say what playbook, you know, we're just at, like, just say the name of the playbook. What did you pick?
I picked Harmony.
Me, Lou, picked Time Traveler. Me, Lou, picked Time Traveler.
Come me, Shayla, pick Unlikely Hero.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Return to Monkey, but conquer time travel. Perfect.
I picked the unlikely hero.
I'm so excited for this combo. I actually was fully like, nobody's gonna pick the time traveler, and I love to be proven wrong repeatedly by my players. ¶¶